I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for Thursday, April the 19th. For the purpose of taking public testimony and conducting a public hearing on House Bill 5047. And Mr. Garrett, are you going to shepherd introductions through? Do you have any preparatory comments?
Just some very quick comments, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matthew Garrett with ODOT. The good folks have devoted part of their day to come down and share their thoughts on the business they conduct with the Oregon Department of Transportation. So I look forward to today. I've told them to be crisp in their comments, 3 to 5 minutes, and you share what you think the committee needs to know about the way you interact with my agency. So
great.
I hope it's a good day.
And is this the batting order, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Okay. Great. Well, it is with great pleasure then that I would invite Ann Gardner from the Schnitzer Group up. Welcome to our committee, and I apologize for starting a little bit late and the paucity of senators. We had a protracted caucus, and I think they're headed down. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Senator, members of the committee. My name is Ann Gardner, and I'm here on behalf of Schnitzer Steel Industries, and I believe the purpose of my remarks are to reinforce the importance of Oregon's transportation infrastructure and to talk a little bit about the experiences that our company is having with the infrastructure because I think they're a representative of what other companies are experiencing as well. Just as background, and I apologize to those of you who've heard me testify recently on this same topic, we're an old Oregon company. We've been around 100 years. We're in the metals recycling business and steel manufacturing, but today we operate in 17 states around the country. 33 states around the country. We export products to 17 countries, and today we're headquartered in Portland. We employ over 3,000 folks. Our business is in the recycling of end-of-life steel products, and like so many other Oregon businesses, logistics and distribution is really at the heart of our business. And if the transportation infrastructure isn't working for us, it affects our bottom line and our profitability. We participated in the cost of congestion studies that I believe you've heard about in Portland Metropolitan and the statewide cost of congestion studies because we think it's important for the story to be told about how important the infrastructure is to the state's economy. I've included in my testimony some specific issues that we're having specifically now with moving product from around the state. We have operations throughout the state of Oregon to our facilities in the Portland metropolitan area. When scrap recyclers, for example, from the Pendleton area are trying to move product into Portland, we hear from them almost every day that they come to a standstill where I-84 convenes with I-5. And similarly, for companies coming up to us from the southern part of the state, we hear from them that they're caught in the traffic jam in the Terwilliger curves. John Carter, our CEO, talked specifically about this at the Oregon Business Council Summit in January, and he talked about the fact that the transportation infrastructure was, quite frankly, the competitive edge that Oregon had for so many years, and we are the ninth most trade-dependent state in the country. And while Oregon businesses have been investing and growing, and our population in the state has increased dramatically, while there certainly have been investments in the transportation infrastructure, we quite frankly haven't been keeping pace. And we are, in our view, losing our competitive advantage. It's important for our viability as a state that we continue to invest and, in fact, step that up. There's one other point that John Carter prepared in his remarks that I'd like to bring to your attention, and that is the vitally important role of the infrastructure, particularly in the Portland metropolitan area, and its importance to business throughout the state. And quite frankly, it's his observation and the observation of many other businesses in Portland that there are policy decisions that are being made at that local level that may not be consistent with statewide goals. Let me give you just one quick example. We had conversations with the city that went on for quite a while where we very nearly changed some industrial zoning right along the waterfront, served by rail, near the petroleum storage facilities where it was very possible that we would have ended up with housing in this prime industrial area. Now, the decision was ultimately made appropriately, but not based on statewide transportation or energy policy goals, but more on some local safety issues. And I want to flag that for you because when Gail Ackerman talks about the new Oregon Transportation Plan, she reminds us, and rightfully so, that local arterials are every bit as important to the transportation infrastructure as are the state highways. So that local decisions, which are sometimes made based on local wants, may be contrary to the needs of the statewide system. Wanted to bring that to your attention, but in closing, just to reinforce the importance of the transportation infrastructure as it serves Oregon manufacturers. Thank you so much for your time.
I apologize for having to step out for just a moment. We're multitasking here at your Oregon legislature. I think it would be very helpful, Ms. Gardner, if you could make a copy of that report, The Cost of Congestion, available to the whole committee. Colleagues, I can tell you that upon reading and understanding that document, it drives home the point that the economy doesn't work for the rest of Oregon if Portland's transportation system fails. And I think that it would be a very useful document for all of us to have. We're sent here by our own areas. We have our own parochial interests. But I think having a clear understanding about how this is a system, and you can't have a conspicuously weak link in a functioning system, it was very helpful to have that report. And if you could get it to the professional staff of the Legislative Fiscal Office, we'll make sure everybody on the committee has a copy of it.
I'd be glad to, Senator. Thank you. And there is the statewide cost of congestion study that was recently released, which just amplifies exactly on the point that you've just made.
If you could get those to us, we'd be very appreciative to have it. Thank you for taking your time to
welcome.
Come down. I would now invite Chuck Hayes, the chairman of the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Chuck Hayes, and I am the chair of the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, which is a citizens group that works very closely and directly with ODOT Transportation Safety Division. The Governor's Advisory Committee is a group of men and women that are appointed by the governor, and we address the impaired driving issues in Oregon. We work very closely, as I said, with the Transportation Safety Division on these issues. We represent a wide variety of stakeholders and advocates that are involved in deterring impaired driving and making our roadways safer in Oregon. The Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI, we assist ODOT in two really distinctive and important ways. Number one is acting as an expert citizen group on programs, activities, outreach, training on DUI policy, rules, and regulations. We also are very much part of the transparent decision-making process when it comes to actually highway safety programs within the state, also helping to guide and also give input on how funding would be used in some of the areas dealing with impaired driving and highway safety. Our committee, we meet monthly, and as the chair, I'm happy to say that we have just a wide variety of people that are involved in this entire impaired driving program and a wide variety of issues. Our stakeholders, as I said, are appointed by the governors, the people that are involved on the committee. But one important thing that we also have that works very well, and that is keeping this line of communication open, is that we also have agency liaisons that attend our meetings. And so one of the things that is just a key is for everybody to be communicating together and working together when it comes to these issues. So not only do we have the Oregon State Police that has a liaison on the committee, but we also have the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, Oregon District Attorneys Association, Department of Human Services. We have the Oregon Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division and the Oregon Public Safety Standards and Training. And so looking at that, and then with those state agencies and then also with the private citizens that we have on the committee that represent insurance, represent other areas, the citizens group, we feel like we're very well represented and able to make contributions to Oregon Department of Transportation and the Traffic Safety Division. One thing that we can say is that nationally alcohol and drug-related traffic fatalities are rising. But yet here in Oregon, we've maintained fairly low numbers and maintained low numbers even while the rest of the country seems to be on the increase. And in 2005, we posted our lowest numbers when it came to alcohol-related traffic fatalities in the state.
Why do you think that is, sir?
I believe that, Madam Chair, I believe that is because, again, of how we have this systems approach. And so looking at the systems approach, we look at everything about not only working with the legislature on laws, but we also look at enforcement, we look at treatment, we look at all of those key areas where everybody's working together. I can tell you that in my job, I retired from the Oregon State Police after working 30 years there, but now I work with 45 states around the country. And I have a chance to go work with these states on their impaired driving issues, and I always use Oregon as an example because we have a systems approach that is working very well where everybody is sitting down together and we look at these problems and try to figure out ways that we can work collectively. And the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI is just a great example of how this works. In fact, we now have other states around the country that, as I said, are looking at the Oregon model and actually trying to develop a similar system in their states. So I think that that's a huge part of it is when we're working together because, number one, we know that there's not as many law enforcement officers in the state to do this, but yet when we look at ways that we can work together and collectively through maybe saturation patrols, looking at ways that we can also assist in using your personnel wisely and efficiently for DUI enforcement and then targeting some of those areas of concern. Another area, Madam Chair, is the fact that we have the Oregon Drug Evaluation and Classification Program here in Oregon that trains officers on how to look for the drug-impaired driver. Well, when you're trained to look for the drug-impaired driver as well as these officers are, well, they're also going to be your best officers when it comes to actually enforcing impaired driving with alcohol. And so you're getting some very good officers that are trained and very proficient. So we think we're getting a big bang for our buck, in other words, when we do have people working and working together like that. So we think that we have...
While you've taken a little break, may I interrupt you to take a question from Senator Verger, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm confused because we don't have enough troopers on the road. We don't have access to alcohol and drug treatment like we should. We have waiting lists at most places. And we have a court system where we're not having as many cases filed. But your numbers are down, and I find that very intriguing.
Madam Chair and Senator Verger, the numbers are down, yes, when we're talking about fatalities. But I think if you look at what we are doing as far as enforcement and prosecution, and also involving the media and making sure that we get the message out about impaired driving, and that's one of the things, again, that the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI does, is that we work closely with the media so that we are sending a message. We work very closely with our legislators as well to try to have laws in place that will be a deterrent to driving under the influence. So could we do a better job? We certainly could if we had more officers and more troopers. As I said, I retired as the director of the Patrol Services Division, and I was there when we took that 100-plus trooper cuts, and so that affected us severely. And so if we could get more officers on the road, we feel like we could do an even better job. But what we're trying to do now is do the best that we can with the resources that we have. And I'm here to say that Oregon is doing a good job. Now, hopefully we can sustain that, too.
I think that speaks to the professionalism of OSP.
And that is, in other words, if I really take this and listen to what you say, the Don't Drink and Drive program would lead you to believe that if you did more of that, then that would be extremely effective, too.
And Madam Chair and Senator Verger, I think that media and education, and that's one of the areas, again, that is part of this group, is that making sure that they are stakeholders and part of this, that is huge. And so we must continue our efforts in that area, and we are.
Thank you. I'll ask you to finish your testimony.
Thank you.
We won't interrupt you.
Well, I just wanted to conclude that, again, we have this systems approach in place here with the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI, and we work very closely with ODOT, and I think that, as I said earlier, we have something in place that is working rather well, and it's working very well, as a matter of fact, and so we are continuing those efforts. And that is really all of my testimony, and I'm open to any other questions if you have any.
Thank you for taking your time to come down.
Thank you.
And now it is a great pleasure to invite a friend to come forward, Ken Whiteman with ACEC. Very nice to see you. Welcome to the committee.
Senator Johnson, members of the subcommittee, I'm very pleased to be here today. Good afternoon. As Senator Johnson said, my name is Ken Whiteman. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of David Evans & Associates. We are a locally based engineering infrastructure firm in Portland, almost 1,000 or 1,100 people in size. 400 of those are situated in the state of Oregon, so we have a vested interest in what happens in this state. I also am the most immediate past president of ACEC Oregon, which is a consortium of 115 individual engineering firms across the state representing about 4,000 professionals in that field. So I come to you today not only as a CEO and a past president of that group, but also as a concerned citizen about what's going on in infrastructure transportation in our state. You've done a good job in the last legislative sessions of approving, I think, significant funding in the ATIA 1, 2, and 3 packages. Now, I want to talk today about how those are working, not only from a consultant perspective, but also in the community perspective. Also want to talk to you about my concern for is what is happening in the future with the potential of the wrapping up of the ATIA 3 package. Excuse me. Also, ODOT's need for professional staff, making sure that they can do their work correctly. And last, urging you to seriously address a funding package in this legislative session. I've been a working partner with ODOT for over 20 years, and in that time we've seen significant changes in how they operate. When we first started doing consulting with them, they primarily were designers, did almost all their work in-house, so we were doing not as much. Over the last 5 years or so, they've switched their processes to do much more contract management, and that's because it was driven by a large volume of work, hiring freezes that were put in place by the legislature, and also significant retirement from staff, senior staff, because of PERS. Now, if I was making this testimony 3 years ago, I would have to tell you that I'd be telling you that my thought process was that the ODOT was in a system, an agency in real trouble. Their view at that time, and excuse the pun, was either my way or the highway. And so it was not much that we could do as providers input. But over the last 2 years, we've seen significant change with the leadership under Director Garrett and Deputy Director Tyndall in turning this organization around and having it be much more collaborative, creating partnerships with a wide variety of agencies, groups, and individuals. And truly now, I think, is on the right track and is moving forward in that collaborative manner, which is critical when you look at the complex nature of projects that are out there. It's important that we provide quality, timeliness, and also responsiveness to the safety issues that are across our state. And leadership sets the tone, and both those individuals are doing, my feeling, a great job in their positions. The second item I'd like to talk about is my fear of the loss of economic opportunity in this state as OTIA 3 wraps down. This is a major transportation funding package, and because it was a major package, you saw an increase in the staffing requirements not only at ODOT but in the private sector, and we've responded to that. We've hired our firm probably an additional 40 to 50 staff engineers and professional staff to support the OTIA programs, and we are consistent with that across the state in our ACEC organizations. We have the capacity to continue that. As you look at the impact to the state, about right now a little over 400,000 jobs are transportation-related or influenced by transportation. That's a huge number. They are also very mobile. In our case, if we do not provide work for our people, they can go to other areas, other states, to have jobs. And that's a loss, an economic loss to this state. If you look at the funding initiatives that have been sponsored in Oregon with the in Washington with the 14-cent sales tax, in Idaho just recently, in the last 2 weeks, passed a $250 million Garvey bond proposal. Utah has $4 billion in transit and transportation packages coming out. And obviously California, at the big gorilla, with $20 billion in transportation. We all of a sudden become the hole in the donut in the transportation services in the Pacific region. And I don't think that's a good state for our state to be in. I would like us to see how we can keep those jobs here. And the way that ODOT has set themselves up over the last 3 or 4 years, it basically has gone from, as I mentioned earlier, a design in-house process to contract management of consultants. And I think that system is working very well, but it required a change in the professional staff. Instead of having large groups of engineers that were performing the work, they now are doing more contract management. And that requires certain expertise. But the other side of the coin is they still need the highly skilled professional engineers on ODOT so they can effectively manage the consultant contracts. What you don't need are contract managers that only manage the contract side. You need to have those really informed professionals that understand the complex projects, like a Columbia River crossing or a Willamette River crossing in Eugene. Those are very difficult projects to perform. Yes, the consultants can do it, but it needs to be under every bit as much professional guidance from ODOT's side. And I think that kind of gets me to my last point, and that is before you leave this legislative session, I would really urge you to look at funding some type of transportation package. This state needs it, and needs it desperately. I think the comments that Ann made earlier to you are very, very apropos and right on. If we do nothing, we need to get an interim basis in there. We need something like $350 million, hopefully this session, which would allow us and tide us over as you move forward out of OTIA 3 and position yourselves to a major transportation package, possibly in 2009 legislature. But do something now because it is needed. If we don't, we're going to lose part of the asset value we have in our infrastructure due to the deterioration of our system. And that, to me, is a critical aspect that, as a concerned Oregonian, I don't think that we should stomach. If we don't, we are going to lose the potential for attracting more jobs in this state. We will lose the advances we have in the improved economy that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. And we're going to reduce the safety on our systems. The safety is going to get worse. You travel on our roads. I know all of you do almost on a daily basis. You know the congestion we face, especially at commute periods. So I urge you to do something now. We can come together as Oregonians to solve the problem, but we need to do it. And so with that, I would ask if there are any questions. I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Weisman?
Representative Tomei. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really not a question, but I'm so glad, sure, Mr. Whiten, that you came today to... on the Transportation Committee meeting yesterday, we had a presentation that Mr. Tindall supervised from about a study about the kinds of things that you were talking about, the engineers that are working for ODOT, and how so many of them have retired or gone on for much better paying jobs in other places. And I would hope that we would be able to have maybe a shortened presentation for this committee, because I think that's an important issue for us to be dealing with.
I'm going to ask Ms. Jordan to make a note of that.
Okay.
Ken, thank you,
Senator Johnson,
very much for coming.
I'll leave you my written testimony, which was probably a little bit more eloquent than my presentation.
We'll make sure that the whole committee gets it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to briefly excuse myself again and pass the gavel to the vice chair. I apologize for the rudeness of leaving. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Okay, Scott Williams.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Tomei and members of the subcommittee. My name is Scott Williams. I'm president of Hamilton Construction Company out of Springfield. We have been doing business with ODOT and its predecessor, Oregon State Highway Department, since 1940. We currently do about $50 to $60 million worth of work every year with ODOT, and they are our biggest customer. In addition, I'm past president of APC, the Associated General Contractors, and am here representing some of their views, perhaps, on the importance of a funding package and funding for ODOT. ADC has enjoyed a long partnership with ODOT and working with ODOT on many issues. I echo what Ken said, that in the last couple of years with Director Garrett and Deputy Director Tyndall, we've enjoyed an even increased partnership with them, working with them on many things and many issues that have to happen to make to get the highways built in the state. A couple of things that I think have been positive and positive in how they've worked with us to save the taxpayers of the state money. We now engage a lot in constructability reviews before plans ever come out. They engage contractors, have them come in, take a look, say, hey, are there flaws in what we're doing? So they're not just looking for, you know, things look good on paper, can't always be built very well. And so we're doing that, and I think that has been a very positive step and something that they've worked with when we came to them and said, hey, we think this would be positive, and we've worked together on that. Another thing is in training. With the OTIA coming on, there was a need for a lot more workers in the industry. And ODOT stepped to the plate with our urging that, hey, we needed to be able to come up with more workforce. And they've developed a plan where they pre-screened, like, apprentice and trainees to help get into the construction industry. Been very positive. Last thing I'd say in a partnering, we've worked together on alternative what I call alternative means of contracting, rather than just design, bid, build. There's been design, build. There's been what they call A plus B, where they take into account price plus schedule, trying to do different things that on individual projects bring the best value to the public. And I think they've done a very good job. Second thing, funding package is so important to our business and the stability of our business. We make a lot of decisions on what equipment to buy, what people to hire, and they're long-term decisions. And when we have uncertainty on what's going to happen in funding, both at the national level and at the state level, it really affects what decisions, the best business decisions that we can make, and to make economical decisions that we can run our business and give the state then the best price available. I think ODOT has done a great job of managing their funds with the increased work with OTIA. As Ken said, you know, they've had to outsource a lot of things because of the freeze in hiring, and they've done a good job of that and how to manage that. But it is become apparent, and you mentioned Doug's testimony yesterday, the importance of increased funding, I'll call it pay for the PMs. It's currently very tough for ODOT to recruit and then retain qualified PMs that can deal with us. We try to put
could
the most...
Could you state what PMs are?
Project managers, I'm
Thank
sorry.
You.
We put our project managers, very qualified people out there. They want to be dealing with people that are qualified to make the same kind of decisions. And it's really tough when private industry, because of what they can afford to pay and the restraints that are put on ODOT, for them to come up with the same quality people and to keep those people. And so we support what ODOT is trying to do in that arena. And basically that's it. If you have any questions, I'm glad to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Tammy Denny? Am I pronouncing that correct?
That's correct.
Great.
With Madam Vice Chair's indulgence and the committee's indulgence, my president, Mike Noonan, from our association, it has accompanied me today. I've submitted our written testimony for the record, but I thought it might be beneficial for you to hear from a producer the support for Department of Transportation and their budget. So I'll turn the microphone to my president, Mike Noonan.
Thank you.
Well,
Mr. Noonan.
It's great to be up here. I traveled up from Klamath last night. We form about
Mr.
over
Noonan, 10. Could you, for the record, state your name, please?
Yeah, my name's Mike Noonan. I'm president of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. Traveled up from Klamath Falls last evening and left a farm operating that's over 10,000 acres. And transportation is very important to what we do down there, as well as all of our Oregon Wheat Grower League members. I left the farm to come up here in support of ODOT because they have done a number of things for us as farmers out for our transportation. We've had a number of issues come up over the last 4 to 5 years, and working with Greg Del Ponte in particular, we've been able to solve those. There's a number of USDOT issues and interpretation of strap laws and also tie-down laws, weight restrictions, all types of issues that affect us on the farm and getting our crop to market. And real simply, ODOT has been a very good company, I would say, to work with. Even though they are a state agency, it's nice to work with people together to find solutions to common problems out in the field. So I thought it was worth my time to come up today because, at least for the type of things that we're dealing with within the agricultural sector, ODOT has been very beneficial to us as producers. So just wanted to let you guys know that.
Thank you, Mr. Noonan. Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I have a comment because I want to add kudos to Tammy. She does a wonderful job for the wheat growers, and I appreciate the work that she does on the Rural Policy Advisory Committee as well. So it's happy to see you here today.
Thank you. Any questions? Tammy, do you have any closing remarks?
Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee, it's beneficial for you to understand that we as an industry depend upon a very healthy multimodal system. Much of our grain that is produced out in the countryside ultimately ends up at the Port of Portland for export. However, we depend upon not only rail but barge. We depend heavily upon the river system for those counties that produce agricultural commodities and can move that commodity to the barge system economically. They're heavily dependent upon the river. We also heavily depend upon the truck system and moving our commodities by all three modes, major modes of transportation. So it is vitally important that we adequately fund our transportation infrastructure here in the state of Oregon so that we can continue to participate effectively in this global marketplace. Our producers absolutely depend on this healthy infrastructure, and we really appreciate your service to Oregonians and your willingness to entertain our position and listen to the position of agriculture, because we are certainly contributing to Oregon's economy in a very real way. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of either of these witnesses? Thank you so much. Thank you for coming from Klamath Falls. That's a long drive. Lanny Gower.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lanny Gower, the license manager for Conway Freight, Inc. Conway Freight is a national motor carrier specializing in next-day and second-day services throughout the United States and Canada for commercial and industrial truckload freight. Our administrative offices are up in Portland, where we employ approximately 1,000 people. I'm happy to appear before you today to speak about the good work of the Oregon Department of Transportation in the area of online services offered by the Trucking Online Program. We're in the business of providing just-in-time delivery of freight, so we can't afford delays, either en route or before getting started. Trucking companies don't operate 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're on the go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's why Trucking Online is so important to us. It's always open and always available. This is an Internet-based service, and it delivers efficiencies for my company, for the trucking industry in general, and for state government. It lets our staff use an office computer to get their work done, whether it's obtaining permits, filing reports, or checking on the status of our accounts. In the last 4 years, the Motor Carrier Division has incrementally added to the number of transactions and record inquiries that can be done online. Today, there are almost 60 different services available. It's no longer necessary to regularly call Salem for help. It's no longer necessary to mail or fax documents back and forth, or to have a driver stop at the field offices. The savings in time and money are hard to quantify, but I can assure you that those savings are there. Conway operates in all 48 contiguous states, so I'm very familiar with the services that other states provide. As you can imagine, The services offered run the gamut from states that offer no online services to a few states like Indiana and Oregon that have a full menu of services. Oregon Trucking Online is definitely at the forefront with regards to the services provided, the ease of use, and the convenience. As you review the department's budget and record of accomplishments, I would respectfully encourage you to fully fund services like Trucking Online. This is government at its best and truly an impressive accomplishment. Vice Chair Tomey and members of the committee, thanks for your time, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions of this witness? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bob Lowry.
Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee, my name is Robert R. Lowry, and I've lived in Corvallis since December of 1961. I serve as a volunteer in the area of public transportation for over 25 years and currently chair the Public Transportation Advisory Committee for the Public Transit Division. I'm here in support of the proposed budget outline for the division. This budget, interestingly enough, is composed of a variety of federal funds that are designated to be used in specified ways for public transit. And I would emphasize that none of the general tax funds are used for either the division or by the agencies that provide public transportation in the state. Federal law permits the state, in this case to the PDT, to use up to 15% of those funds for administrative function. That is to enable the distribution of the funds. To handle the workload involved, an additional position is being requested. I'd point out that most of these funds do require a local match and that all require that the local agency or provider be the initiator of the request and provider of the match funds. The Public Transit Division notifies potential agencies the appropriate funds, paperwork required, assists in their responding, verifies the requests meet federal standards, awards the monies, and tracks the agencies fulfilling their designated use of the funds. They also provide educational programs to these local agencies. Many of these programs are oriented towards the needs of the disabled community and seniors, and I'm in that latter category. As local communities choose these programs, they are enhanced by local funding to permit the service to also serve the general population. Youth and low-income families are also served. Under a new federal program, Job Access Reverse Commute, known as JARC, low-income families such as those that work in the service sector, which is nearly one-third of our economy, are able to have rides to and from work. In Corvallis, and which I'm most familiar with, the Corvallis Transit System has recently enacted a JARC grant, and we have seen a number of service sector employees taking advantage of the increased service hours and eliminate for them taking and having a 4 or 5 mile walk to access their work site.
Mr. Lowry, yes. Could you talk a little bit more about, this is the first I've heard of, maybe other people in the committee have heard of this, this job access reverse commute. I'm assuming you mean that instead of people going to work during the rush hour at 8 in the morning and coming back at 5, this would be an opposite commute?
Well, it's probably serves a couple of things. The original intent was it's recognized that some people are now commuting from a central city to the suburbs, or they're commuting across the suburbs rather than the traditional pattern of going from the suburbs to the central city.
I see.
And the funds actually allow you to expand service and see if it helps more workers. In the case of Corvallis, we're only serving within the city limits, so, you know, the suburbs aren't involved, but we are picking up service sector people, enabling them to go to work. And in our particular case, expansion was on Saturdays because we were not operating a full-day service.
Thank you so much. That's very helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. We currently in Corvallis provide about 500,000 rides a year, 40% of which are OSU students, 16% are youth, 13% disabled, 8% seniors, and the remainder general ridership. And one thing I would point out here is contrasting, for example, just for illustrations, Albany operates what I consider a safety net program for their public transit. And Corvallis has reached out to try and get choice riders, ones that don't have to use a transit system. And that's why our ridership is up over 500,000. Albany's, I think, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000. The populations are very similar because it's the approach of the local citizenry as to what they want to provide. And obviously a 500,000 rides a year reduces our demand for public infrastructure and roadways. And I would point out these federal grants are used throughout the state, including such remote areas as John Day, Burns, Ontario, Curry and Coos counties, along with the more populated areas here in the Willamette Valley. Much of the funding is population related, being specific for rural or small city use only. And I would like to be pleased to answer any questions if I may.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lowry. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Mr. Lowry, thanks for your testimony. You noted earlier that federal law permits the Public Transit Division to use up to 15% of the funds for administrative purposes.
That's correct.
Do you know what percent of the funds they currently use for that purpose?
No, I don't. Public Transit Managers back here can...
If you could identify yourself, please, when you come up.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Tomei and Representative Edwards. For the record, I'm Michael Ward. I'm the Public Transit Administrator. Representative Edwards, I'd have to double check and get back with you on just exactly what percentage of those funds the division uses to support the admin.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, Public Transit hasn't presented their budget yet, so that would be a good time for him to answer that question for you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay. Senator Monroe.
Yes, thank you. Corvallis Transit System, what are the fees that are charged to riders?
I'm going to admit that I use it every day, but I use a pass. I believe it's 75 cents. I'm assuming you're probably aiming towards what percent of the operating funds come from fares, perhaps.
Well,
as your... Oh, okay.
I understand that they're all subsidized.
Right.
I was the transportation guy at Metro for 12 years and worked with TriMet a lot. You have 40% of your riders are OSU students and 16% are high school age students, so that's over half of your total riders are young people. Do most of those young people buy passes, or does OSU give its students passes as a part of their fees or something?
Thank you, Senator Monroe. OSU has arranged for a contract the students have for a number of years to basically prepay rides, and this is paid to us, and they can use their pass, their student card, to gain access to rides throughout the day.
So it's a part of their student fees?
Follow yes, up? That's correct.
Their student fees, yes. I really think that's the way to do it. Was at a Railvolution a few years ago, and they had people there from Boulder, Colorado, and that's the way they did it. They basically, virtually everybody in that college town and university system had a transit pass, and so the use rate was much, much higher than if you have to drop your three quarters in or your buck or whatever it is every time you get on the bus.
Colleagues, we're going to have to move along. Thank you, because we have quite a few other people who will be coming to testify. Thank you so much, both of you, Mr. Lowry.
You're most welcome.
Dave Josad.
And in that vein, Madam Vice Chair, I'll make my comments extremely brief for you.
Thank you.
First of all, good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee, for asking me to appear and testify about something I'm very passionate about. For the record, I am Maytrek & Company Senior Vice President Dave Josted. Maytrek & Company is headquartered here in Salem. We employ over 1,000 people, most of which are in Oregon. We have over 900 trucks and drivers that operate nationwide. I'm here to add my comments in support of ODOT, the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, especially Director Matt Garrett, who I work with, and Administrator Greg Delpani, who I work with very closely. They asked me to talk about a topic that I'm very passionate about, and that is safety, as is our company. I've chosen on that where we've been very cooperative with the staff of ODOT. I want to talk about the Green Light Pre-Clearance Program, which promotes safety among trucking and the public. And you have it's the last sheet of the handout you received. You have a representation of a transponder that is in our truck. So what is this program? And how I can best describe this to you is you're probably most familiar with the Woodburn scales. And as you approach those scales over the road is what looks to be like a camera hanging down one of those camcorders. That's actually a transponder that communicates with this device, which is on the windshield. At the same time as this is giving ODOT, the scale people, information on the trucking company, who the truck driver, the specific truck, what our safety record is, what our maintenance record is, our out-of-driver compliance records. You pass over a strip in the road, and that weighs each axle of the truck to tell if it's overweight. Then the driver, this will give an audible sound. The driver will either get a red light, which mandates that the driver has to come into that weigh scale, or a green light where he can bypass it. Not every trucking company has the opportunity to have this opportunity to bypass. Only the safest ones do. Fortunately, we've been a trusted carrier, and we have been designated as one of the safest. Out of what you're probably familiar with is the federal government safer system, and our driver compliance, our maintenance records on our equipment, and our accident records, all a combination. This doesn't give us a free pass to go by every time. Randomly last year, we were pulled in one out of every 10 times we passed a waste scale. We adamantly support that random check. First 3 months of this year, ODOT did 4,000 green pass lights a day. Since this program, they started tracking this program in 1999, they've given 8 million green passes. Maytrek & Company had the random distinction of receiving the 8 millionth one. Now, I said I'm passionate, as is our company, about safety. Paramount is safety with us. So why is this program important to us? You have a 73-foot truck and trailer rig. Maximum weight is 80,000 pounds. When we're, for instance, I'll use I-5 Woodburn because it's the closest. We're going down there at 55 miles an hour, maximum speed. Most other cars are going 65, 70, 75. Let's be honest about it. We have to slow down in the right lane of traffic to exit, get off, go through the scale, stop, then get back up to speed, again, 80,000 pounds, hopefully up to speed to merge back into traffic that's traveling faster than we are. That's an accident waiting to happen. This program saves us time. We conservatively estimate that we save 5 minutes on one of those stops, and that's conservative. Okay. That 5 minutes, if you relate to what it costs us to operate a tractor-trailer rig, saved us last year with our 33,613 green light bypasses, approximately $330,000 just in Oregon. Okay. It's also very economical, efficient, and practical, and very quantifiable for ODOT. And why is that? That's because they're not looking at the same safe trucks, same safe drivers over and over and over. Remember, the random check is always there, but that allows them to focus their resources on potentially other drivers and other trucking companies that don't have, for instance, the safer standards of safety that we do. So it's a very quantifiable program. And I would urge you to do that program. My last comment is we believe in being very cooperative with those agencies that monitor us. ODOT is one of those, and they do an excellent job of that. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the Greenlight Pre-Pass program or any other program or working relationship we have with ODOT.
Representative Monroe. I mean, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time saving in the red light system, the green light system, but what you haven't quantified is the increased amount of fuel that you would burn from decelerating from 60 miles an hour to zero and then going back up to 60 miles an hour as compared to what it would have cost you to run across there without decelerating and starting. Can you quantify that also?
Madam Vice Chair and Senator Whitsitt, I'd be happy to. We have several costs that are paramount in our industry. One is our driver costs. The other is our equipment costs. And one which gets probably the most media attention right now is the fuel cost, which is skyrocketing. And we can't control that fuel cost, but we can control what we do as to the trips we make and not bobtailing and so on. Senator Whitsitt, I do not have an exact figure for you, but I can tell you that our trucks in idling position burn approximately a gallon of fuel an hour if they were just idling. That has two factors. That's unproductive. There's no propelling of equipment going on here. The trucks aren't made to sit there and idle. And if I could, the other thing is it's polluting the atmosphere when we're just sitting there doing it. We have equipped all of our trucks with alternative devices to heat the truck so we don't have to burn fuel. We give our drivers incentives for not idling the truck, which we're able to monitor. But you pay approximately $3 a gallon for diesel fuel right now. It's going up, and we burn 1 gallon an hour just sitting there idling. You have your five minutes of stops, 12 stops, you burned a gallon of fuel. And we had 33,613 bypasses in Oregon alone last year. And you can do the math by multiplying the two. It's significant. Thank you for your question.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, the Green Light Bypass Program, do you believe that it in itself is an incentive to truck drivers and truck owners to obey the laws, the weight limits, and the safety laws that are required by the state?
Madam Vice Chair and Senator Monroe, yes, I do. And I'll say that on behalf of us. And you have to understand, we're one of the larger trucking companies and our peers in the industry who take safety very seriously. The smaller 1-2 family-owned businesses, who don't do a compliance driver with their monitor, don't do compliance on their drivers, don't do the equipment checks and so on. I can't really speak to them, but for the larger trucking companies, us and our peers, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Salem. Chris Bell.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Tomei, members of the committee. My name is Chris Bell. I'm an associate dean in the College of Engineering and a professor of civil engineering at Oregon State University. I have been involved in transportation research at OSU for almost 26 years, much of which has been in collaboration with the Oregon Department of Transportation. I'm here today to speak in favor specifically of the funding packages requested for the research unit and the transportation data section. My testimony will be about the importance of research and data. Firstly, I'll describe the partnership that the universities enjoy with the ODOT research unit. When I joined the OSU faculty in 1981, there was already a very strong partnership between ODOT and OSU. Today it is even stronger and more universities are involved. The formation of the Oregon Transportation Research and Education Center at PSU in the recent federal transportation authorization has resulted in collaboration with PSU, OSU, the University of Oregon, and the Oregon Institute of Technology. I will refer to this new center as the University Transportation Center, or UTC, in the rest of this testimony. The formation of the UTC has significantly increased the flow of federal funds to Oregon's universities and provides an incentive to leverage ODOT research funding as a match, effectively increasing ODOT's research budget by at least a factor of two. Oregon's congressional delegation, led by Peter DeFazio, enabled this new center to be established in Oregon a little over a year ago now, sending a clear message that they see a need for investment in transportation research. In effect, I'm speaking on behalf of all the members of the university transportation community, and not just for Oregon State, in favor of these requests from the research unit and the transportation data section. Both research and data needs are critical to leveraging the $16 million of federal funds that are already coming to the UTC over the next 5 years. There are also other federal funds that can be leveraged, particularly by the research section, if they have more staff in that unit. A key part of the research collaboration is that representatives of the universities serve with ODOT staff on the expert task groups that recommend projects for ODOT's annual research program. This has been done hand in hand for quite some time. They are also represented on the research advisory committee that selects the final projects to be funded, a relatively small number of projects per year presently. In the current year, the first year of funding for the UTC, most of these projects are jointly funded by the UTC and by ODOT. The UTC funding available next year and the next 3 years beyond that will almost double the current year's funding, and more projects will be jointly funded, putting a greater demand on the staff of the ODOT research unit. The collaboration between ODOT and the UTC ensures that the university researchers focus on solutions to real-world problems, particularly those in this state. It also ensures the success of the UTC and continued funding in the next transportation authorization. The partnership will also result in more graduates to help meet the demands for engineers by ODOT and the engineering companies that support the state's transportation enterprise, companies such as David Evans and Associates and the other ACEC members. Focusing on data for a moment longer, most of us in the transportation research community, for most of us, research and data go hand in hand, and usually they're inseparable. many current and future research programs are highly dependent on the availability of good data. For example, the constant quest for improved highway safety, which saves lives, involves quantifying where crashes occur, the characteristics of the crash, its location, weather conditions, vehicle speed, and so on. Providing researchers with access to the highway system and all the data that characterizes that system produces the best research results. So research depends on this great data being available through the data section. A specific example I have of successful research that relies heavily on data is the ongoing partnership between ODOT and OSU to evaluate Oregon's aging bridges. The researchers involved large-scale testing of beam components at Oregon State, as well as site evaluation of bridges and collection and evaluation of truck loading data. The outcome of the research was that ODOT developed a better process to determine which bridges are in critical need of repair and which can be dealt with at some time in the future. The access to comprehensive truck loading data enabled the researchers to fully understand the effect of truck loading on our bridges, something that really wasn't possible before, and at what time each bridge will reach a critical condition. Now, some would say that this research saved ODOT hundreds of millions of dollars. The reality is that ODOT was able to use limited resources more efficiently and give the taxpayers a much better rate of return. This example of great research and great asset management happened because ODOT's leadership trusted in a research partnership between Professor Chris Higgins at OSU and because of Oregon's leadership in weighing trucks in motion as part of the Green Light project that we just heard about. That provided the very good data that enabled the loading on our bridges to be fully understood. In closing, I respectfully request that you fund the ODOT Research Unit and Transportation Data Section's request for additional staffing. Both areas have the opportunity to significantly leverage funding and return on investment. Thank you.
Very much for your testimony. Any questions? Next, I'd like to invite, thank you, Mr. Miner. And after him, Mr. Barrows and Mr. Martin and Mr. Carswell. And with contemplating 5 minutes for each of you remaining, we'll sprint to the finish line.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Don Miner, here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association, and I will help sprint. I would like to speak to our experience with ODOT Motor and Motor Carrier Division's efforts to coordinate the OTA projects in a fashion that has not impaired mobility, has allowed us to continue to operate within the state. Our association represents 10 manufacturers in Oregon who build manufactured homes. They employ about 2,600 people annually and have a payroll of about $100 million. Last year, they built about 5,600 individual manufactured homes comprised of more than 12,000 individual sections. About 60% of these structures were sold in surrounding states. So they originated here but had to go through the state. In addition, we have two other manufacturers who produce other types of factory-built structures, commercial buildings, and industrial buildings, portable schools, that can, in fact, be larger than individual manufactured homes. Because the length and width of these structures is very important to us that we have predictable access to the roads. A bridge project that narrows the width can force these structures off onto side roads where they run into tree branches, overhead power lines, bridges, etc. So it doesn't work for us. In years gone by, I'm embarrassed to say that this would occur from time to time. Not every day, but from time to time, and it'd be incredibly disruptive to find out that we didn't have access because somebody had done work on a road without notifying the industry. That would have impacts on our consumers who have home loans that are set to close at a certain interest rate. And the work has to be rescheduled. Sometimes that wouldn't occur. Furniture sometimes sitting in delivery vans. So you can imagine how nervous we were when we began hearing about the OTIA projects and the hundreds of bridges that would be rebuilt in Oregon. We were very, very concerned that this could destroy our industry, that it would be very disruptive. Early in the process, we met with then Director Warner and to talk about our concerns. Bob Russell was with us. His analogy was when they rebuilt the Fred Meyers here in Salem, they kept the store open. They didn't close it. People could still go there and get a loaf of bread, a gallon of milk, and a little bit of dust, a little bit of disruption, but it was still open. And that was the analogy that we hoped would apply in this reconstruction project. And I'm happy to say that has occurred. Matthew Garrett has kept that policy alive. Mr. Tyndall, Mr. Del Ponte worked closely with the tribal industry to ensure that as this work is being done, we've had full access. It's incredibly rare, if ever, that we hear that we're surprised by a closure. To do this, ODOT formed what they call the Statewide Traffic Mobility Steering Committee, made up of trucking interests, including ourselves, local governments, AAA, et cetera. And this group sets down and establishes a policy of how we are going to manage that. In addition, Motor Carrier has assigned a staff person whose only job is to work with the districts and regions, project managers, and the trucking industry to identify potential impacts.
Mr. Miner, we've just added another batter to the batting roster, so may I ask you to sprint to the finish?
Sprinting to the finish. This process works very, very well, and we hope that it will continue.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. Miner? I am now informed by the agency that we're going to take the batting order slightly differently and invite the estimable Mr. Chandler forward. You can settle up with your colleagues down in the lobby message center.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. Thank you for adjusting the batting order. And I was asking ODOT if it's polite to point out to the chair that you mixed your sports metaphors with sprint and batting, but I don't
want to testify, Chandler.
My work here is done, Madam Chair. From the home building perspective, transportation, an effective transportation system is obviously critical. Homes don't sell in communities with bad roads, with bad systems. You can't get all the equipment and the material necessary to build a home without a good transportation system. And I just want to place on the record that for the last several years, what a delight ODOT has been to work with. That has not always been the case from our standpoint. They have been far more, we don't always agree, and we've had some fairly pitched battles. They've been extremely inclusive of our industry and of getting our input at the table on the highway plan, on work groups, on staff, being part of big interview panels for staff, for getting involved in the discussions as they plan things, as they look at their budgets. And I really appreciate that. And I think that kind of collaborative, cooperative effort deserves, frankly, if I may be so bold, the legislature's recognition and funding. This is a critical agency, and one hates to choose amongst the various agencies in the state. They all have important functions. But we are about to choke to death on our transportation system or lack thereof. We need billions of dollars of investment that we don't know where it's going to come from. We're hoping the money fairy shows up, I understand. This agency is doing an excellent job with the resources it has. I think it's in good hands, the stewardship of the funds. I commend them to you. I hope to continue working with them in that collaborative fashion and occasionally the confrontational fashion to try to move policy issues forward. I don't think there is right now a more critical agency for the economy of this state than ODOT. That I would not have always said that, as the chair certainly knows. But I think this agency, I'm very comfortable with the leadership of this agency. I think the commission's doing a great job. They're cooperating with other state agencies in a way that we've not seen before. I hope you can find them some, knowing what they've asked for, but perhaps a shekel or two extra.
Thank you, Mr. Chandler. Any questions of Mr. Chandler? Thank you,
sir.
I would now invite up Mr. Barrows. Good afternoon, Mr. Barrows.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon to you and the members of the committee. I'm Dave Barrows, here today representing Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. And I won't filibuster as Mr. Chandler did, but I will echo what he said about I actually work with the department on representing three or four different clients, and they are a pleasure to work with, have been for a long time, continue to be. But I want to speak specifically about the rail division, because under Kelly Taylor's leadership, they have really become not only a good agency that does the things it's supposed to do, rail safety, check to make sure the spikes are staying down on the ties, all those good things, but have become a voice of activism for the notion that everything, God bless the trucks, and I love the trucks, everything can't move on the trucks. And the rail is part of the final solution, as is air, as a lot of things, to have a solid transportation system in Oregon. And so I'm here to say we are strong supporters of the rail division, and we hope that this committee will join us in that view. Thank you.
You get extra points for putting in a pitch for aviation. Any questions for Mr.
Barrows? I forgot all about that, Madam Chair.
No, please sit in. Any questions for Mr. Barrows?
Thank you,
Mr. Barrows. I would now invite Mr. Martin forward.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I wear several hats today. I represent the Union Pacific Railroad, Alaska Airlines, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. Except for Dave,
multimodal guy.
Except for Dave Barrows, I have been around here longer than anyone else. I have 40 active years of working with ODOT, starting with a benevolent dictatorship in 1967 run by Glenn Jackson, to what has got to be the most cooperative democracy I've ever been around in the current administration. How good are they? They're damn good. You have one of the finest agencies. You've heard several of my brethren say that. They're easy to communicate with. You can't always get a hold of Matt Garrett, Joan Plank, but there's one person I can always call and get an answer from. Victor Dodier, who some of you know, is there, I think, 24 hours a day. Every time I call ODOT and I can't get anybody else, I get a hold of Victor, I get an answer back. And that's something you don't get. That's just kind of the general. They also believe in multimodal. They really, truly believe in multimodal. Most states don't. But Oregon does. They get it. And they get it. And there's a picture. I wish you had the visual aids to do it. The Atlanta Constitution ran a picture about a year and a half ago. It's titled, Will 23 Be Enough? It shows an 18-lane freeway, highway, I think it's Interstate 95, 18 lanes wide. They're going to add enough to get to 23, and they're not sure that's going to be enough. That in itself tells you that something's wrong with transportation in this country. We, in the Portland area, I don't think I have to tell anybody from the Portland area, you couldn't find the land to put any more lanes on. They're widening 205 to six lanes both ways, and that's barely going to solve a problem. The multimodal thing is vital. Specifically, I want to talk about two things. The rail division, and I echo everything Dave Barrows said about Kelly Taylor, but she's got a request before you that I hope you take dead serious, and that's the rail infrastructure study. It is vital. I read a wonderful book by James Beard. I'm a foodie, so I read his life story. He grew up in Portland, and the joy of his life was taking the rail line to go to the beach. He went to Union Station with his parents, often in a horse-driven carriage, and they took the train to Astoria, through Astoria, ultimately the seaside. People actually went that way at one time. The rail system worked. There's a rail line still there, but if you took a fully loaded freight train down the Columbia River, you couldn't go to Astoria without unhooking it a number of times and taking individual cars across the bridges because they'll fall in. Our rail system, especially the short lines that are important to several of your districts, are desperately behind. They're older than I am. The rail that's been on the ground has been there since the First World War. The ties, they can operate at 10 miles an hour. We have no idea how bad some of it is, and we're never going to be able to fix it until we get this inventory. Please don't partially fund that study. It needs full funding to get the full study done. I'm very serious about it. In the area of transit, Michael Ward, the new administrator you haven't heard from, is a breath of fresh air. Listen to him. He knows what he's doing. He's two dozen years working at ODOT. And one of the things that rail needs is something that Senator Monroe did 20 years ago. We need additional funding for the elderly and disabled. We have 2 cent cigarette tax and other funds that your committee has appropriated in the past. We've run out of money because the program is so popular. So please help us find additional revenues to keep that very popular program going. They're more of me all the time needing that kind of service.
You with Barrows.
Well, Barrows didn't need it yet, but I find. I've left with you a piece from TriMet that echoes the transit division. I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Martin? Thank you. Best for last. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to have time for comment? Is this?
Let's hear from Mr. Carswell, and we'll leave time for comment.
I don't have written testimony, but hopefully my impression will last.
Fund rail, goodbye.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bruce Carswell. I'm president of Portland and Western Railroad, who has that rail line to Astoria, by the way, and it's not quite that bad, but it needs help. And also vice president of Oregon Short Line Association. Here in support of ODOT in general, under Director Garrett, it has been absolutely fabulous, but I would echo what was said earlier about Kelly Taylor in the rail division. It's a very good advocacy and regulatory group. They find the balance very well, and I fully support everything that they do. The grade crossing safety section is a model in their efficiency of applying state and federal funds effectively. I will put my pitch in the state rail fund. The state study on the rail infrastructure is a critical need. The adage has been made about Oregon becoming the garden hose, connecting the fire hoses on either side to all three directions around us, north, south, and to the east. We need to get a better idea of what it's going to take going into the future, and the full funding of that study is fairly critical. In addition to that, obviously, the short lines are going to have some challenges in front of them to continue to support the economy and its current growth rate. And commuter rail, which is burgeoning, and I have the fortune to support that first project on our rail line. The challenges of balancing freight and passenger on a system at near capacity really need some smart people to put some effort into finding that balance. So I support that, and I would ask you to do the same. That's pretty much all I have. Any questions?
Any questions of Mr. Carswell? I just want to thank you for being in the building and helping to put the face on short lines. That hasn't always been the case, so thank you, Mr. Carswell. Comments, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it may be that Director Garrett would need to respond. I'm not sure, but I'd like to understand how these folks were brought to the table today.
Sure, I'd invite Mr. Garrett up.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, what I asked my division administrators to do was to give me a list. Folks who could tell the story of how, within that specific portfolio, how we interact with the private sector, with other state agencies, with just the business partners that my agency engages in. And because of invited testimony, trying to respect these folks' time, I said, give me a prioritization list. So I said, let them tell the story, but bring them to the table.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. We were multitasking today, and I had other committee activities happening. The fine group of people who come to testify today, and many who are experts in all modes of transportation, and I have a great deal of respect for ODOT, Madam Chair, but I believe it's a bit disingenuous to sit here with this committee and have this love fest for ODOT and not have invited the Tyron Pates from Hillcrest Market in Cottage Grove, and not to have invited the Steve Agees from Totem Market in Roseburg, and those people, and I could name names of every person in this room who might have had that, and I just wonder where they are.
Mr. Hanna, Representative Hanna, they will have their chance, because we would not have this level of orchestrated testimony without ample opportunity for the public, and we are going to have a whole day reserved to public testimony. They can come down here, sign up. You can go drive them and bring them here.
Okay.
But absolutely, we are going to hear from the public. This was an opportunity to have experts in the different subject areas, and I approve this methodology.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one follow-up to that. a call by the director of ODOT to come and testify before this committee is a very powerful thing. And for those who would be on the opposite side, it's just like it is when we campaign, the tough doors are the tough doors. The easy doors are the easy ones. I just hope we encourage the agency to go to their to those they've had trouble with, to be inclusive.
Representative Hanna, I would like to offer the testimonial that some of those people were in this room. Ken Weitzman is a personal friend, and so when he had difficulty with ODOT, I was the first guy he called, and he just raised hell with the agency. And he used me as the blunt instrument to beat them up. And so there are clearly people in this group that have had profound, acute, pointed differences with the agency. Maybe that's just because you haven't had the experience to see this budget previously, but I can tell you that there are often loud critics among the people that testified. And I think that it is tremendous testimonial to the agency and to Mr. Garrett that people who are intensely critical are willing to find the opportunity to come down here and tell how the agency responded. And I will just tell you anecdotally that my first session in this building, having finished five of the most painful years of my employment history working for a dysfunctional ODOT, Representative Butler gave me the gavel as a freshman to gavel in ODOT's budget hearings. I was a vocal critic of this agency, and I am delighted to say that having had the opportunity now to watch their budget but also to watch the agency mature, I'm adding my testimonial to the fact that this is a very well-run state agency, and there were critics. This wasn't just a bouquet toss in a dog and pony show, and you can bring anybody you want for the public testimony. You get them here to sign up, and we'll have them on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're
and
welcome.
And I'm not a critic of the agency. I just want to make sure that those individuals have that opportunity.
They will. And I think Mr. Garrett gets to tell the story with some of his selected people to talk about how the agency's running. We'll have an open call to the public to come down and share their opinions. Any other comments? Senator Monroe.
Oh, just briefly, a little anecdotal. Mr. Martin was talking about how he'd been around here longer than everybody except Dave Barrows, and I've got a picture in my office that proves it. It's a 30-year-old picture, and there's a very young state representative there, which would be me.
Handsome young state
representative. There's Betsy's dad, which I had the privilege of serving with, and there's this old guy standing in the front. It was Roger Martin.
On that note, we stand adjourned.